We've got a race. We had a feast. We're headed to the mighty Yukon, and we're halfway there. Let's kick it off.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with a top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
It's Friday the 13th. One of my favorite things that happens on a Friday. What about you, Robert?
Yep.
Absolutely. So, Robert, people are absolutely loving our audio file segment. So, let's share one from a reader and fellow musher, Garrick Schmidt, from Mushing Magazine issue 201. He chose Short Change Hero by The Heavy. So here are a few of the lyrics. This ain't no place for no hero. This ain't no place for no better man. This ain't no place for no hero to call home. This ain't no place for no hero. This ain't no place for no better man. This ain't no place for no hero to call home.
I love the audio file segment. It's one of our favorite things to do, not only here on the podcast, but also on our Q&A and in Mushing Magazine. If you're interested in submitting yours, you can do so by sending it over to podcast@mushing.com. I like this one. I know we just shared the chorus stanza there. It's a double of it, but it's a cool song. Did you listen today?
I did, Robert. So for those of you out there, I had never heard this song before. And I got to tell you, it's worth the listen on headphones instead of in your car going 70 miles an hour today, which is how I listened to it. And there was a little bit too much road noise. It starts off quiet and it grows into the actual singing, but it takes a while for them to get there. But once they do, the lyrics that they are singing are pretty hardcore, and they resonate with what's going on, not only out on the trail, but in the world today. So I say give it a listen with an open mind.
Okay, guys, here we are in the leaderboard in first place, currently at mile 536, 439 to go. So well past the halfway mark at Ruby is Jesse Holmes. Following up pretty close at about 15 miles back is Paige Drobny at mile 454. Riley Dyke at 517 with 458 to go. Travis Beals, 506 with 469 to go. And Millie Porcelet at 497 with 478 to go. And at the back of the pack, we have Jody Potts-Joseph, mile 409, 566 miles to go. Grayson Burton, 413, 562. Adam Lindermuth at 420 with 555. And Sam Papperman at 421 with 554. It looks like Jesse and Paige so far have taken both their 24 and their 8-hour rests, and we'll probably see some of those other guys doing it pretty quick. We're going to give a trail report here in just a little bit. So with Jesse at 536 and Jody at 410, there is 126 miles between the two of them. I know we talked yesterday, Jonathan and I, about this long distance, well over a day's trail in between them. So hopefully Jody is doing okay out there. Hopefully they don't do what they did last year with that competitiveness rule. We'll have to see. But yes, things are moving along pretty good. But let's talk about the latest award. And that is Jesse Holmes wins the first musher to the UConn award. He has won all the awards so far. So Jesse Holmes, bib number 7, is the first musher to arrive at Ruby on the UConn River. And he arrived today at 4:55 a.m. with 15 dogs in harness. In doing so, he got the first musher to the UConn award. The award consists of a gourmet dinner prepared by Chef Rob and Brandon Decibel from locally grown restaurants, which owns the popular Anchorage Eatery, Spinard Roadhouse, Snow City Cafe, Crush Wine Bistro, and South Restaurant and Coffee House. The menu consisted of smoked salmon crostini, white bean and bacon soup, watercress salad, beef bourguignon, and chocolate pot de cream. And it looks like from the picture, he is enjoying it. I think I can make that out. I think that is our mutual friend, Billy Hona. Isn't that right, Michelle?
I think it's Honey.
Honey, yes.
We have had, we have broken bread with Billy Honey and Kathleen Frederick a few years back, and it was quite the entertaining meal that we shared with them.
Yeah, so remember, guys, he had this meal today at about 5 a.m. or thereabouts. I don't know if I would want to eat all of that stuff at 5 o'clock in the morning, but hey, when you've been on the trail for all of these days, I think anything would sound good. And it looks like they're having a pretty good time there. And remember, he will receive that meal again at a later date. I believe they're still doing it for him and another guest. Michelle, I know that you and I have been to all of those restaurants, the Roadhouse, the Snow City Cafe, and South, but we have not gone to the Crush Wine Bistro. For folks that are listening outside, I'm sure a lot of those guys will be traveling to Alaska at some point. What do you think about those three restaurants?
I think that they're very good. And, you know, Alaska, we have a certain type of flair, if you will, in our restaurants. And some of them to us locals can seem a little bit similar. But definitely all of the ones that we've tried by that restaurateur have been very good every time.
Out of the three that we've been to, I like the Snow City Cafe the best. It is definitely a good place for breakfast. I know we've only been there a couple of times because, hey, when you live in Willow at 63 miles away from town, you got to leave pretty dang early to get breakfast at the right time, right?
Hey, you know what? If these people are listening to our show, I would implore them to pull up and put a great brunch place out here in the valley.
For sure. So that's the halfway award. Remember that these guys do have to start taking their 8-hour break. And I'm going to read briefly through the 49th State Sled Dogs post. It is Wade Mars's page. And as we mentioned earlier in our coverage, it's manned by, we believe, his wife. And it says that, of course, Jesse is the first to arrive after running straight through from Cripple. He completed his 8-hour mandatory in Ruby and departed about 2 hours ahead of Paige Drobny. Drobny also completed her 8-hour rest and is back on the trail. And she said the only real way to beat Jesse may be to out-strategize him. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. Riley Dyke, camped before Ruby, came through the checkpoint and is already back on the trail. Since he took that rest before Ruby, he will probably move up the trail to Galena. Travis Beals is behind Riley. He has already departed Ruby as well, with just a short stop of about 3 hours 45 minutes, meaning he still has to take his stop. Currently sitting in Ruby are Pete Kaiser, Wade Mars, Jesse Royer, and are all likely trying to figure out what the next step is going to be. As they say on the report, we also learned that Ryan Reddington overslept on the trail, which effectively gave him about an 8-hour rest, but it does not count towards his mandatory. Michelle Phillips, Jeff Dieter, Matt Hall are still making their way, and their decisions are beginning to unfold. Millie Porcelet ran straight from cripple to ruby, and she is on her way to get on the trail. So remember, they have to take that 8-hour rest either in Ruby, Galena, Nulato, or Cowtag. And that is a long stretch of the river. And we're going to talk a little bit about the villages and all of that in just a second, but we're going to jump right over pretty quickly to our musher profile of the evening. We're doing this a little bit first today, a little bit earlier today, because we're talking about Paige Drobny, who is doing excellent on the trail. And as she said in that report, the only way she's going to beat Jesse is if she out-strategizes him. And I think she might have that up her sleeve. Michelle, what do you know about Paige?
Well, I know that she was in my top five. That I know. Paige is a veteran musher, as all of our listeners are aware of. She is a racer whose story blends science, wilderness living, and a deep partnership with her dogs. Paige was born in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, but the mountains and wide open landscapes of Alaska eventually became her home. Today, she lives along the Denali Highway near Cantwell with her husband and fellow long-distance musher, Cody Straith, where the two operate Squid Acres Kennel, training a team of roughly 37 sled dogs for some of the toughest races in the world. The kennel's unusual name actually has a scientific origin. Before committing fully to mushing, Paige came to Alaska to study fisheries biology, and her master's thesis focused on squid in the Bering Sea. The couple jokingly named their homestead Squid Acres, and when the sled dogs arrived, the name stuck. Paige's entry into the sport is one of those classic mushing stories. When asked how she got started, she often answers with a simple line: "My husband built me a sled." That sled led to a few dogs, then more dogs, and before long, she was racing long distance across Alaska's vast trail systems. Since then, Paige has built an impressive racing resume. She has completed 10 Iditarod Trail sled dog races, steadily climbing the ranks and establishing herself as one of the sport's most consistent competitors. Her performances include a fifth place finish in 2024 and a career best third place finish in last year's Iditarod, putting her among the elite teams in the race. Along the way, she has also raced many of Alaska's other demanding long-distance events, including the Copper Basin 300, the Cusco 300, and the Yukon Quest, building the kind of experience that only comes from thousands of miles on the runners. Away from the race trail, Paige and Cody operate Susitna Adventure Lodge, welcoming guests to the remote beauty of Alaska's backcountry. Both bring decades of wilderness experience to the job and hold extensive outdoor certifications, including wilderness first responder training. Life for them is built around the outdoors, whether that means guiding guests, running dogs, or exploring Alaska's vast winter landscape. For Paige, though, the heart of it all always comes back to the dogs. After years of racing and living by the rhythm of the trail, she often says the real reward is simple: spending time on the trail with her best furry friends. And with every mile she runs behind her team from Squid Acres Kennel, Paige Drobny continues to prove that passion, perseverance, and a strong bond with the dogs can carry a musher a very long way down the trail.
A couple of quick things there. It said in the bio that she met her husband when he built her a sled. And for many years, Cody had a business called Dog Paddle Design Sleds. And those were bulletproof sleds. I know he recently sold that business off. I'm not sure who took that over, but they have some really, really high quality sleds. The Squid Acres Kennel, I know that they were on our podcast many years ago, and we're going to look through all of our files to hopefully find all of these episodes that we're referring to. I know that we talked to Cody. I don't remember if we talked to Paige. During the Iditarod, they call themselves the Idita Squids for their fans, which is kind of cool, I guess. And often in the ceremonial start, they're wearing flashy costumes, usually fancy.
It was squids this year.
I know a year or two ago they were wearing sharks. I was thinking about Baby Shark with Katy Perry and in the Super Bowl and all of that. But yeah, they're pretty colorful folks there. And the last thing I have to mention is that they live pretty close to Jesse Holmes. So I guess it's a run for the neighborhood. There's something to be said about living and training on the Denali Highway. That's where a lot of people go up and train. And of course, they have a race or two up there as well. So good luck to Paige. I think she's doing very well here, currently in second place at 7 o'clock here on Friday evening, about halfway into the race. And speaking of halfway, we have finally turned the corner on our coverage. We started our nightly coverage on Wednesday night, the day before the banquet, and it is a 20-day slog for us. So we have reached that point where we've done it for 10 days. We will be here for another 10. I am almost certain we are the only podcast in the world that does a show every single night before the banquet, starting banquet, all the way through the finishing banquet. So I guess we can hold our hat on that a little bit, and I'm excited to see where it comes. I know a lot of you have sent me a message today talking about our coverage with our buddy Jonathan Hayes. He plans to be back on in a couple of days. We had never intended him to be on every night because he does live on the East Coast. He is a father with a full-time job and a couple little kids, so it is 11 p.m. right now on the East Coast, and I'm sure he is snoozing away, but we hope to have him back pretty soon. Michelle, before we talk about villages and the village life, let's do our Moment in Mushing History segment.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in Mushing history, sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
All right, are you guys ready? Let's go back in time to April 1978. William Sonny Nelson, scheduled to enter the 1978 Iditarod race, was killed in the crash of a twin-engine cargo plane in Merrill Pass. Two other persons were also killed, along with 12 of Nelson's 14 dogs aboard. The weather was good at the time of the crash, with a reported ceiling of 10,000 feet. Nelson, from Equok, Alaska, had placed 7th in the 1976 Iditarod and was 17th last year. Musher James Brandon of Equok told the audience of the 6th annual Iditarod starting banquet at the Anchorage Westward Hilton that he does not intend to run Nelson's two surviving dogs in this year's race. It had been rumored that he might consider doing so. Brandon named Nelson as one of his sponsors. He had been training with Nelson this winter. The 1978 race has been dedicated to Nelson. The 1977 Nome Iditarod contestant Al Crane drew the number 41 starting position in a commemorative gesture for Nelson. Because of the lack of snow in the Anchorage area, the ceremonial Mulcahy Park race start has been eliminated for the second year in a row. The race begins Saturday from Big Lake, with 39 mushers leaving the chute at 2-minute intervals. Position number one has, again, been reserved in memoriam for famed Nome musher Leonard Cepala. Dick Mackey went on to win this race on Sunday, March 19th, 1978. All the predictions of a squeaker came through this morning shortly before 7 a.m. Gnome time, when Dick Mackey and Rick Swenson fought it out for the lead to the finish line. Mackey was a scant second ahead of Swenson.
And if you guys recall, this was the closest finish in Iditarod history. And I think at this time is when they implemented the rule that said a winner is the finisher by the tip of the lead dog's nose. So that is the story there. Lots of history here in the Moments in Mushing History segment. Robert, I know a lot of people are enjoying this. Michelle?
I would just really like to know if they are enjoying it. I'm trying my best to be a narrator of times gone by.
Yeah, that we had a very conscious decision this year that we're going to bring in a lot of the history to the podcast. I know we have all of those archives of Team and Trail and Mushing. And what a better way to bring this history to some of the youngsters that are listening. I know you are listening to these podcasts on your earphones as you're doing a million other things, scrolling on TikTok and playing video games at the same time. Hopefully you're spending a little bit of time with us to learn a little bit about the history of the sport. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the villages on the Yukon. I have had a chance to spend some time in a few of these villages, including in Ruby. We talked about our friend Billy Honey and spending a little bit of time with him. Also, Nate Titus, who was instrumental in helping us out during the 2020 Serum Run expedition that I was a part of. We pulled into Ruby with our crew in 2020, and I vastly remember coming off of a couple of very hard days on the Yukon. I had a busted up and frozen solid snow machine. Everybody was tired. We took off up that huge hill off the riverbank there and into town. And what a surprising sight that it was to see. And I know that all these villages on the Yukon are very close, meaning family and basketball games and all of that. They travel up and down the rivers on snow machines, and I guess a few dog teams even today. But the hospitality there in Ruby was second to none. We spent 2 days at the school there. I don't remember if it was a middle school or a high school or what. We stayed in the gym there. They prepared us big meals. They helped us get our gear back in shape and all of that. And then we took off down that same big hill the two mornings later, and within a mile or two, we got stuck in waist-deep, chest-deep overflow as we worked our way to Galena. Galena is one of the larger villages on the Yukon. It's about a day's travel or so for a dog team, not that far on snow machines. As we mentioned, they go back and forth. The Yukon is the highway of interior Alaska, and they go by very, very quickly. We've told stories about close calls and even collisions with dog teams on the Yukon before. When we got to Galena, we stayed in the community center, and it was a great spot. Huge wood stove there, great hospitality. I remember walking down into town there and visiting the store. We did a presentation at the school there, and everybody was so welcoming as we were there. And that's pretty common on all of the villages along the trail. Just up north of there, I guess that would be northeast. From there would be Nulato, and then onward to Cowtag. And this is where all these teams will be making their way over the next few days. If you don't know much about the Yukon River, you've probably seen pictures. If not, I'm sure you've seen pictures of the mighty Mississippi River. It is very similar, well farther than a half mile across in most areas, and it is nothing but openness, and it's just a slog on a dog team just getting up and down that river. I don't know how it is on a Iditarod team, but I know as a expedition musher and frequently traveling rivers down in South Central, it is just a monotonous mile after mile. Michelle, I know
Careful there. I have heard that expedition musher is becoming a bad word.
I know. Speaking of which, if you did not notice on the trackers and on the leaderboard, they have switched up the rankings, if you will. It now lists them as a separate class of mushers. For a few days, they did not do that, but it still has them on the trackers. Of course, those are working on their own. And as we're looking at this right now, it looks like Thomas Werner is in Nulato. We were just talking about that a second ago. And he has 583 miles in the bag.
Shell is with him.
Shell is with him there. But Steve Curtis is way back there. He is 119 miles back. So he's about as far back as Jody is from Jesse.
Now, you brought up where Jody is and that dreaded competitiveness rule. My question, and I don't know enough about this new class, quote unquote, to know, but they are getting support from Iditarod, correct?
As far as my understanding.
So does that mean, though, that the volunteers are being held back in some of these villages because they're providing Iditarod support to the expedition mushers as well? And does that actually help with the competitiveness rule for the back of the packers?
That is a good question, and I think we need to research that because Steve Curtis is 100 miles. So, yeah, he is 200 miles, I guess, from Adida math is not working very well. But it looks like Steve Curtis is at mile 311.
He is 100 miles.
From Jody.
From Jody.
So he is 111 miles from Jody.
And
so,
Jody is a little more than 100 miles, or excuse me, yeah, a little more than 100 miles from Jesse. So that's putting it into perspective. Anybody that drove out here from Anchorage to Willow, if you came from the airport, it's 70 miles. Just to give you guys some perspective. Willow Lake restart is 70 miles from the airport, about 65 miles from 4th Avenue. So that can put this into some perspective for you guys. So if Mr. Curtis is 100 miles from Jody, I really would like to know how much Iditarod is providing continued support in each of the villages for this particular expedition musher, because the other two are trading out dogs and they're so far ahead that I don't care, you know, really where they are. I think that they've provided some interesting perspectives for the sport. I see news articles popping up from all over the country in my news feed about this billionaire dog musher. So that's a good thing, right? It really is a good thing that we're getting some press in the positive out there because of Werner and Roki. Mr. Curtis is hanging back with Mr. King and the veterinarian
Jessica.
I'm sorry, I can't pronounce her last name the right way, but Jessica donated her dogs to this endeavor, or provided her dogs to this endeavor. And Jeff King provided two lead dogs. And I know that firsthand because he was one of my soundbite interviews. And so I know that they are running a little bit more conservatively. They only had 10 dogs when they went out. They didn't go out with 16 like Werner and Roki, and they're not trading out dogs. So in my mind, Curtis is really treating this as a expedition.
So let's go back to the math for just a second. So currently, Steve Curtis has run for 311 miles. Thomas and Shell have run for 583 miles. So that would be 272 miles separate the very front of the pack where Thomas and Shell are, and Steve Curtis at the way back of the pack. Hold on.
And then, well, it's day five.
Yep.
And okay. So they're doing 100 miles a day. Roki told me that they were going to do the Smiles for Miles in the villages. I know that when we participated with the Serum Run expeditions, even when it was being ran by Aaron McLarnon, you guys spent hours in the villages.
So back to the math. Jody, who is currently in the Red Lantern position, is 98 miles ahead of Steve Curtis. And Jody is, 190 miles, it looks like by my math, without a calculator, behind Thomas and Shell. So if you're picturing this, you're probably banging your head against the counter as I say this. But I guess the best thing to say is there is a whole lot of distance between the last place musher and the first place musher. So what Michelle is saying is, are they going to invoke this rule that has been the talk of Iditarod for the last few years?
It's literally a dark cloud over Iditarod for the last 3 or 4 years. Since COVID, they really started to knock down doors and dreams on the competitiveness rule. And I'm just curious as to, you know, what they were saying about the expedition mushers getting Iditarod support. You said they said that in the media meeting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think that they are going to withdraw an expedition musher because they're technically...
I'm not talking about them withdrawing the expedition mushers. I'm talking about the back of the Packers.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We're speculating right now, but all I know is there's a lot of distance between the first and the last team. There are a lot of volunteers on all of the spots from Nulato all the way back to wherever Curtis is in McGrath. So we have literally the entire interior of Alaska from pretty much the far end of the Alaska range, those few checkpoints back there, Nikolai, McGrath, Takotna, etc., all the way to almost the end of. So well over a third of the race between the very last team and the first team. So it's going to be interesting to see how these teams progress down the trail and what happens with the rules, both the expedition class rules and the rules for the competitors. They say over and over again that they are being treated as two separate classes. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of days. Michelle, what else do you have for us before we give an update on tomorrow's show?
I don't know that I have anything left for us this evening, Robert. I think we have given everybody a packed show with lots of information and even something to think about. Tomorrow on the podcast, we will talk about the second third of the race, how the field is working down the trail, and the history of the Serum Run expedition that was started by Colonel Norman Vaughn. If you've got questions, be sure to leave us a text or voicemail by calling our hotline at 303-578-9881, or you can leave us an email at podcast@mushing.com.
And people have asked where the best place to comment on our stuff is, because we share it all over the place. You can comment on the podcast players, you can comment on Facebook and X and Instagram and LinkedIn and all over the place. By far, the best place to shoot us a comment is via email at podcast@mushing.com. We will do our best to answer your questions that are showing up on the platform of your choice, but we may not get to it. As I mentioned last night, I got a notification from Spotify that a new comment came in. And I logged on to Spotify. I don't do that very often, and you'll know why here in 5 seconds. I logged on there, and all of a sudden, I saw a handful of comments that dated back almost a year. And I had to answer
he
all
He wasn't ignoring you guys, I promise.
And I had to answer all those because we do our best to answer every comment that comes in. And we got those too. So you probably got an email today if you commented on Spotify a year ago. And you got an email or whatever you get from the comment reply, replying to a comment that you probably forgot that you made. So be sure to follow our show wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, whether that be on Spotify or Apple or iHeart or any of those others. But I think the easiest spot to listen is on mushing.com. There's a player right at the top of the page. You can listen right there when you're taking a walk or, as we said earlier, playing video games at the same time. You can do what you want. So on behalf of my co-host, Michelle, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys tomorrow. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.